Begin the current Tav, Masech the Baba Basa, Dav Kuf Samach Gimel. Begin on the bottom of Kuf Samach Amabez, on the bottom line, where the Gemara continues the discussion in the previous Tav, which highlighted a Bryce in the explanation of the Halacha of Rabbi Yechanan, which he said that one has to repeat the content of the document in the last line. Explains Rav Amram, what's the reason? Because we learned in the Bryce. If one leaves a space of two lines between the writing of the text of the document and the witness's signature, the document is pasul. If you leave one line, it's going to be kosher. The reason for that is because we don't learn out anything halachically regarding legalities from the last line. So therefore, we repeat just redundancy. We recap whatever's written in the document in the last line. Because if there's one line that you can't learn from because we're concerned for the gap, the space that the witnesses have to leave, they can't right at the end of the document. As Rashbam explained, when we don't write Shor B'Kayam, there's a concern that the lender might insert something there in that little space, so we don't learn anything from that space. And therefore, if there's only one space, so anyways, you're not going to be able to forge anything, it's going to be kosher. Two spaces, that's already problematic, because then you will learn from the first line, and the lender might forge, then the document is going to be puzzled, even if, let's say, no forgery, it wasn't made the way that Takanas Chachamim was. And that the Gemara continues and says, Ibailu, that the following question to qualify this halacha. Shnei Shitin Sha'amr, this that they said that if there's a gap of a space of two lines worth between the writing of the document and the witness's signature, that's going to be possible. And that the Gemara continues in Tav of Kuf Samach Gimel Medalf and asked, Hein Va'aviron? Did that mean that the measurement of how much a writing of a line normally is, with the space that's usually between lines, then it's going to be possible? But if, let's say, it's less than that, it's not going to be possible? Or maybe no. The space of two lines, even without the space between the lines, that will also be a measurement of invalidating. So in other words, usually when you write a line, you have a line, a line, space. You don't write words right on top of each other. Here we said the measurement is two lines worth. Does that mean only two lines worth without the space? Or no, does it mean how much two lines normally would be, which has even space with it too, and needs that amount to make it invalid. So Amrav Nachman Yitzchak, he says, Mistab, it's logical to say the Hein Va'avir, and it means the amount of how much a line would be with the space between those lines. Because the Isagadayta Hein Va'avir, and if you were entertained to say that the Psalm of Bryce was talking about was two lines worth even without the space between the lines. So then actually the Bach brings that the following four words are taken out of the Girsa according to the Rashbam, but either way we'll read it, that it's Shita Achas B'lei Avira, then one line without its ear space, but essentially the concept is, like these words are saying, L'mai Chazya, then for what purpose, what utility does it have? In other words, it's going to be recognizable then, if you only have the amount of space of two lines, but not how much you usually have with two lines, because you're not counting the ear space between the lines, well then it's recognizable that it's a forgery. Because what's going to end up happening? Let's say there was a space of two lines, not how much two lines you normally is, but a compact two lines without space between them. So what's going to happen? So the lender's going to want to forge. What's he going to do? He's either going to have to write very small letters, smaller than how much the letters are written in the document normally as it is, because he has to leave space between each line. And as we explained, because he has to actually write two lines because the last line is going to be disregarded anyway. And if he's not going to write very small because he doesn't want to be recognizable, hey, why are these words like just thrown in, stuffed in over there at the bottom? He's going to write large letters. Well, then also it's going to be recognizable, the forgery, because he's not going to then be leaving any space between the lines as all the other lines in the document are. So either way, says Rav Nachman Yitzchak, rather it must be that to invalidate the document, the leaving two open lines worth between the shtar and the chasimas edim must be the lines with their space, because if it's only the amount of two lines worth without the space, then there's no concern for forgery anyway, because he's either going to be writing too small or not be leaving space between the lines, and then anyway it's going to be obvious and blatant that it's a forgery, and we won't come with this concern that someone might do something and get away with it. Another qualification of this halacha, Reb Shabsi Amr Mishmei Dechizkia, says, Shnei Shitin Sha'amr, this halacha that we said regarding the invalidation of leaving two lines worth between the writing of the text and of the witness's signature, that was according to the measurement, B'ksav Yidei Eidim, with the type of writing that's done by witnesses, which is larger lettering than how much the types of writing that a scribe does. And therefore, it's like Savi Desev. It's not enough to make it puzzle if it's two lines worth with its space of the writing of how large the writing of a scribe normally is. It has to be bigger than that to be possible. My time, what's the reason? So he explains. The Chalam Azayiv, because anyone that's going to be forging, Lav Lagabi Safa Azal Mazayiv, he's not going to go to a scribe and say, here, do me a favor. You see this? I want to get a few extra thousands out of this guy. Write for me here in this space. Because maybe the scribe's not going to want to. He's not going to listen to him because he's going to say, what? People are going to hear about this and no one's going to want to come and do business with me because they're going to find out that I'm a liar and a cheater. Rather, the guy who's going to be forging, he's going to be doing it in private in his own house, and he doesn't know how to write such delicate small letters the way the scribe does. Rather, he's going to be doing like a common person. A common person has to write larger, and therefore, there's no such a concern as the small lettering. It's got to be big enough, which, as we said in the previous interpretation of that, has to be two lines with its space, and big lettering, how much a normal person writes. And says the Gemara v'kama. So how large is that, ultimately? So Amar Yitzchak ben Elazi says, k'gein lech lecha. Meaning the words lecha, lecha, ze al gabi ze, one on top of the other. Which he's not coming to disagree with what Chizki has said. Most definitely it's going to be qualified in the handwriting of a normal person, like how large witnesses sign. That's how we're going to evaluate the two empty lines. However, what he's explaining and qualifying is, but you still need to have airspace between the lines, besides for the width of the writing itself, so that if, let's say, you had the word lecha on both of these lines, one on the top line, one on the bottom line, you need to make sure that the height of the lamed of the bottom line will not bump into the bottom of the chaf sofit, of the end of chaf, of the top line. Because sometimes that could happen where you're writing a word and you have to go down with the end of chaf and you go up with the lamed. So therefore, he says that not only do you have to have two lines and its spaces and the handwriting of a regular person, not of a scribe, it's got to be that much space to say that you might even have the word lecha on both of these lines. So says the Gemara, Al Maksavah, so says the Gemara, obviously we see that he holds what you ultimately have to have as a gap that would be problematic, that we invalidate in the Braisa, is Shnei Shitin V'Arba Avirin. It has to be amount of space of two lines worth and four ear space gaps, which is because you have the two ear spaces between the two lines. The reason for that is because you might have a chaf and a chaf on the top line and a lamed on the bottom line. And then you can have the ear space on top of the top line because you might have a lamed, because we're saying you have a lamed and a chaf on each line, which the lamed on the top line goes up. And then you have to have also the space below beneath the second line because of the end of chaf of the word lecha on the bottom line. Which, as Rashbam says, it doesn't literally mean to say that having lecha, lecha, those words right on top of the other one. Because to the contrary, that's not such a concern. We're saying, but actually that if the lamed of the bottom line might be right under the endachav of the top line, that's where the concern runs into. Therefore, you need to have that much space. Four ear spaces together with two lines worth. If you have that much, then that's a problem. Because then you might run into concern because the guy's only going to forge if he knows he has that much space, where if he's going to be writing a word, it's going to fit in. Because if not, he's stuck. They see he tried forging. He's not going to be able to even use the document at all. So therefore, it's only if there's that much space, then there is a concern, and then we invalidate the document. Now, Rav Chiya bar Ami b'shmei de'ula Amar, he says, k'gain lamed melmalo, the concern is only if you have to have amount of space that you create a lamed on the top line, b'chav melmata and the end of chav on the bottom line. Whereas the Gemara explains his opinion, amaksava, obviously we see that he holds, shnei shitin b'shleish avirin. Has to be the amount of space that you can write two lines with three ear spaces. And the reason is because he disagrees. He says it's going to be possible even with a smaller measurement, that between the two lines, it's enough with one ear space. Because whoever's forging it could move his hand in the way that he could distance the lamed of the bottom line from right directly opposite the endachav of the top line. So all you need to have is one ear space between the two of them because you'll be able to get the endachav in that ear space. You'll also be able to get the lamed in that ear space without concerning that they might bump into each other, which then would require two ear spaces between them. So he takes away one ear space from the previous opinion. He says even smaller, he says, k'gain baruch ben levi b'shita achas. It's going to be possible as long as if you have enough to write the word baruch ben levi on one line, meaning the endachav and the lamed on that one line. Whereas the Gemara explains his opinion, k'savar shita achas v'shnei avirin. He holds, as long as it's amount of space, he's the smallest measurement, that you could have one line with two ear spaces, which is that you have to have two ear spaces because you have to have one empty space on top of that line because of the lamed from Levi. And you have to have one air space beneath that line because of the endachaf of the word baruch, which as Tosha explains, but that's still going to come out to be two lines worth without the air space, because if not, then what does it help that if you're leaving one line's worth, as we had asked previously, one line's worth we disregard, because that's why we say that it's going to be kosher, actually, when you have one line's worth, because we disregard it, we don't learn anything out from that, and that's why we usually are chayzeh binyan de shalshtar. It means if you have that amount of space, which is two lines worth exactly compact, then you have to have one line's worth with two empty spaces, one on top of the other one. Those are the different opinions regarding this psul of two lines. How much? Is it just two lines? Is it two lines with three spaces? Is it two lines with four spaces? Now, Amar Rav, Rav says as follows. Now, he qualifies this halacha from the Brisa and says, Lo yishanu, we didn't learn this Brisa from the previous daf, that when you leave a gap of two lines worth, which we described exactly, what does that mean? It's the ksav of Yidei Edem, and it's also regarding how many ear spaces you need. Whatever it is, but that halacha of two lines worth that's puzzle, says Rav, we didn't learn that. That was Ella. That was only if you made that gap between Edim Liksav, which we had explained in the Brisa, between the writing of the document and the signing of the signatures, which is usually right under the writing of the text. Aval bein Edim Lasharasa, but between the signing of the signatures and the validation of the document, which is called Asharta, which is based on the word Vasharinu Vekaiminu Hakasabai, that we validate, we verify what's written in this document, which is what the Bezdin does. There's usually a document which has the text written that Reuben borrowed from Shimon all $1,000. The witnesses sign. Now, but we don't know if it's a kosher document. Maybe the witnesses were forged. So then the courts come and they write on there what's called a henpik, which is this asharta, which is that we know, we verified this already. We already had two witnesses who recognized the witness's signature and said that it's kosher. That's called, after the witness's signature, the judges sign on that document. So on that says Rav, if there's a gap of even two lines between the witnesses and the asharta, which is the judge's signatures, a filatuva, then even if there's a distance of more than two lines, namik kasher, it's also going to be kasher, where, as we'll conclude from the Gemara, it's going to be talking about that, you're right, there's no gap. It's talking about how even if there was a gap of more than two lines, but it was colored in with ink. And as the Gemara will explain, because generally the courts do not sign on verifying that this was filled with ink, rather it's going back on the primary part of the document. But again, we don't have to be concerned that this will be filled in with forgery, because this, you can't write over there. It was blotted out with ink. But the Gemara first goes through the discussion and asks, "Maishna bein edim liksav." So then the Gemara asks him Rav's interpretation. What's the difference between the witnesses and the writing of the document that we said that no, two lines is going to be possible? Why? Dilma mezayif v'kasa my debay v'chasim mezadi. Maybe the guy's going to forge. He's going to write whatever he wants to. The witness is already signed, so it'll be going on whatever he added on in those lines. So that's why it's possible. But then ask the Gemara, "Bein edim lasharta nami." Then the same thing should apply between the witness's signature and the verification of the judges, which is, since there's an open space over there, mezayif v'kasev my debayi. So the one who's holding the document, the lender, will forge and write whatever he wants over there in that space. V'chasim isadi, and you already have the witness's signatures, and you have the verification of the judges on that document, and you'll be able to collect whatever it is in that open space. So why is it any different than the case of the Braisa? Explains the Gemara dimitayitli. It's talking about where it was dirtied, it was blotted, that whole empty space between the witness's signature and the judge's signature with ink. And therefore you cannot write any forgery over there. But, says Rashbam, yes, what the Gemara essentially is saying is that if there came this henpik, which is the verification of the judges on this document, and there was an open space of two lines without being blotted out with ink, it would be possible, because yes, that was not make like the Takan's Cham, which would be concerned the same way we have it with the witnesses on the Shtar, so it would be between the Asharta and the Chasim HaSeidim. But then the Gemara says, Ihach, but if that's the case, then Beinedim L'Shtar Namir Taitli, so then why is it any different that we're saying that by Asharta it's Kasher, and by Edim it's puzzle? Oh, why? Because by Asharta, we blot out with ink. So then say the same thing also by the document. Say that even when there's two lines, it could be kosher if you blot out with ink. Why is it any different? Why did we always say two lines worth? Puzzle. You got to make, can't sign so far down. Why? Just blot out with ink. Same way you're doing by the Asharta. Oh, so Amri, they said, no, that would be problematic. Because Sahadi, Amri, people are going to say, Sahadi atiyutuhu dechasimi. You know what, if you're going to do that, people are going to say that the witnesses, they were testifying regarding the blotting of the ink. And they're going to say that the witnesses were not testifying regarding the primary documentation of the document. As the Gemara says in Masechtas Kittin, that we're concerned in certain situations that if it has, let's say, a greeting there on the bottom of the document before the witness's signature, people are going to say that they're just testifying regarding the greeting that it says over there and not on the primary text of the document. So here also, people are going to say that the witnesses were testifying that in front of us, this was blotted out with ink, and it was just done so that no one should suspect meaning that their whole testimony was only that no one should suspect the document holder that he blotted out something that it said over there. And they're going to say, no, it was empty. We verified that he blotted out on the empty space. But therefore that will be problematic, because then the whole document's not going to be kosher, because we're not going to have witnesses' verification on that. We're going to say that they're only testifying on the blotted out part. So you can't use that as a way of koshering the document, to the contrary, because people are going to say that the witness is only then testifying on the blotting out. So the Gemara asks, wait a second, b'neidim l'shar tanami. Then you actually have the same problem between the witness's signature and the hempik of the verification of the cords. If you're saying that the reason why there it's kosher is because that empty space of two lines with it's blotted out with ink, so it cannot be forged. But then, Ami, we should say that the same thing is, people will say, Beidina atiyutuhu dechasimi, that the judges were not verifying the document. The document won't be kosher necessarily. They're only verifying that this was blotted out on empty space. And I think Gemara says, no, Beidina atiyutuhu dechasimi. No, the courts, they don't verify, they don't write their whole hempik on a blotting out. That's not normal for them to sign on. In contrast to witnesses, where everyone is available to sign on a document, even ignoramuses, amiratzim, people could suspect and therefore say that it's not a kosher document and say that they will only testify regarding the blotting out. So therefore, that's why it will not be an option to rectify the empty space of two lines by blotting it out by witnesses, because then actually they will say that they only testify on the blotting out. In contrast to Asharta, we're not going to assume suspect that the judges were testifying in the blotting out, and we'll know it was on the primary part of the document. And since we blotted out that space of two lines with ink, we have no reason to be concerned with Azif, and that's why by the Asharta it's going to be kosher. But the Gemara continues asking, regarding this that we said that Rav said this psul of two lines is only by the witness's signature and the gap of the writing of the document, but that's not a problem by Asharta. But the Gemara asks as follows, V'leichesh dil magayiz lo le'ele, but we should be concerned, even by Asharta, because maybe that the document holder will cut off the entire upper part of this document, meaning, essentially, he'll cut off the entire document with the writing and the witness's signature. What he's going to do is as follows. Umochik le tiyuta, because as we explained, there was the writing of the document, there was a witness's signature, there was a gap, but we blotted that out with ink, and then we had the signing of the judges. But what this guy's going to do is he's going to cut off everything up until the blotted out part and the signature of the judges. Then he's going to erase the blotted out part. What he's going to do is he's going to write a loan, which never happened. He's going to forge witness's signature on the erased part, and then he's going to bring it in to show, hey, look, I have judges verifying that this is a kosher document. No one's going to have to verify the witness's signature, because the witness's signature already verified by the courts, because that's what it looks like. You see a loan with a witness's signature, which he forged, and usually you're not going to have to verify it, but it's already verified by the judge's signature. And moreover, because V'amar Rav said, Shtar haba hu ve'edav alamecha kasha. Rav said that if someone brings a document where both the writing of the text and the witnesses are both on an erased document, it's going to be kosher. And therefore, what's the difference if the witnesses signed on a blank parchment or on a dark parchment? Rav says that since we recognize the witness's signature and the upper part, both of them were only erased only one time, and it's the same as the place where the witness is signed. So therefore, Rav says that's a kosher document, because we have no reason to be concerned that something was erased, because we could tell that both were erased only one time, and therefore it must have been the same thing that the witness is signed on what was written over here. So therefore, as the Gemara, the same thing over here is by Asharta, that even though we don't recognize the witnesses that were signed on top by the erased part, but we're going to rely on the Asharta, on the judge's verification, that's after that, that's validating the signature, and therefore it's difficult. How could you go ahead and validate this document because of the blotted-out part, this guy is going to be able to erase the tuta, the blotted-out part, and he's going to forge a whole document or writing of a loan that never happened with forged signatures, and that's kosher because Rav said that if you have a erased document, a totally erased document with a document and witnesses, it's kosher. So that's kosher, and then you have the judge's signature beneath it, which seems like that the judges have verified this document. So the Gemara continues on the base and says as follows. The question is not going to be difficult according to Rav Kahana. Did he actually taught this halacha that if someone produces a document where the text and the witnesses are both signed on the erased part, that that's going to be kosher? He taught that Mishmei de Shmuel. He taught that teaching from Shmuel, so then Shapir would be very well. You could say that, no, according to Rav, it would be possible, and therefore wouldn't be difficult, according to Rav, how he says that this chart is going to be kosher when you blot it out, because you wouldn't be able to erase and write a text with a document and then have that sharta on that, because according to Rav would be possible. It's only according to Shmuel that it's kosher. But El Rav Tribumi de Masni Lomishmei de Rav, but according to Rav Tribumi that he did teach that aloha in the name of Rav, so Maya Klemema, what are you going to say? Now, Rashbam actually points out that this question is actually difficult and could be asked by every document that has a handbook verifying it from the judges on the bottom. And that is even where there is no two empty lines between the witness's signature and the Asharta, because essentially what he could do is he could forge the entire upper part of the document with the witness's signature, because what he could do is he could erase the whole thing, and then he could write and sign on that erased part whatever he wants to. Because according to this halacha of Rav, the whole document could be written on an erased part, and it's going to be kosher. And the Asharta, which is on the bottom, which is the judges, is verifying that, and it's going to make it kosher. And that answers the Gemara. No, kesaver, in that case, Rav would hold, kol kihai gabnin, such a situation. In other words, if it's not just a document, you're right, if it's just a document, and that's it, the writing and the witness's signature, and they're both on this, on an erased part, and you could tell that they were both only erased once, so we don't have to be concerned that, let's say, the witness is signed, and then the guy erased it and wrote it on the second time. So then it would be kosher. But in this situation, which we're describing, which we're asking on Rav's halacha, where there's a hempuk on the bottom, and you have that the text and the witnesses are on the erased part, then such a situation, ein mekaymen oisem en asharta shabai. Then you would not be able to validate that document from the asharta, from the judge's signature. Ela mena edim shabai, only from the witnesses that are signed on that erased part, because obviously, as we had asked, because then we'd be concerned that maybe they erased, and then they'll just make believe that the judges had verified that part. That's why, since we cannot verify from the Asharta in that situation, so now Rav's halacha makes sense. So when you distance two lines worth the Asharta from the witnesses, and you blot out the whole thing, it's going to be kosher, and we could rely on the Asharta, because you're not going to be able to write the text and the witnesses on the erased part to say that, because as we said, that you cannot be mekayim in that situation from the Asharta, and moreover, as we said, that we're not concerned that the judges are signing on the blotted out part, rather they're testifying on the primary part of the document, and that's why in this situation the document is going to be kosher together with the Asharta. That was Rav's opinion. Rabbi Yechonam, he disagrees on Rav's halacha. He explains that Lo Yishanu, we didn't learn the halacha of the Braisa that said that if you distance the witnesses a measurement of two lines worth from the text that's going to be pasul, but one line is going to be kosher, that was Ela Beina Edim Liksav. That was only said between the witnesses and the writing of the text. Al Beina Edim Lasharta, but between the witnesses and the verification of the judges, Rav said one way. He said one extreme. He said that actually then even more than two lines would be kosher. Rabbi Yechon takes the opposite extreme. He says, Afil Shita Achas Pasul. Then even one line's worth of a gap is going to be possible, and as Rashbam says, even if you blot it out, and as the Gemara explains the reasoning for Rabbi Yechon's opinion, and it explains it in the question format. What's the difference between when there's a gap of even one line between the witnesses and the asharta, the verification of the judges, where we're concerned? Then that's why we say it's possible. Dil magai is leiloi. Maybe the document holder is going to cut off the whole entire upper part. V'chasav hu ve'edav, and he's going to go ahead and forge and write the document with its witnesses. B'shita achas, he's going to make up a whole new document on that one empty line. V'ksavar, because moreover, Rabbi Yechonon holds shtar haba hu ve'edav b'shita achas. If a document comes where the text of the document and the witnesses are all written on one line, and the witnesses are also on that same exact line, that kosher, then it's kosher. So then you run into this problem. What the guy could do is, since if there's one line gap between the whole document, including the witness's signature and the asharta, so he could cut off the whole upper part, He'll write a whole new document with witnesses on the one empty line, and then we're going to rely on the Asharta, which comes right after it, to verify that document. Now, actually, the inference, as we'll shortly see, is that it's only if the document is on with the signature of the witnesses on one line, that is where Rabbi Yochanan says it's kosher, and that's why you run into this problem, why he says it's pasul. But if actually the entire document was on one line and the witnesses are on another line, then Rabbi Yochanan, as we're going to see later on, agrees that it's going to be pasul. And the Rashbam explains what's the reason for that. That when the text and the witnesses are on one line, it's kosher, is because the Rabbanan did not differentiate between a large document or a small document. Why should it be any more problematic, a small document than a large document? So therefore, even if it's all on one line, it's going to be kosher. But if the text is on one line and the witnesses are on the second line, then it's pasul. And the reason for that is because, as we said in the previous daf, that if you distance one empty line between the document and the witnesses, we said it's going to be kosher. And the reason was, as the Gemara explained, is because we don't learn out anything from the last line of the document. Now, if you're going to say it's kosher where the document is on one line and the witness is on the second line, then you would have to be concerned that maybe that the document holder is going to cut off the whole upper part and he's going to write in that one empty line whatever he wants to, and then he's going to sign witnesses. So that's why it's actually more problematic by having the document on one line and then the witnesses on the other line, because then on that same line where the witnesses are, you're going to come to write the document. So that's why it would be possible in that situation. But one thing is, first the Gemara is explaining Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. If you're saying that the reason why by the Ash'art it's going to be possible even when you have one line space between the witnesses and the document, because you could go ahead and forge whatever you want on that line. And the reason is because if you have the witnesses and the document on one line, it's going to be kosher. And that asked the Gemara, and meaning you could fit in that one line the text and the witnesses. And then you have the Ash'art to verifying that. So although you forged the witnesses and you're not going to be able to pass it through anyone, but you don't have to verify it because we have it verified through the Ash'arta. But not asking more Yehachim, but if that's the case, then you would have that problem also when if you have one line's gap between the witnesses and the text of the document, where we know the Brisa said it's kosher in that case, but why? But maybe the guy, the lender will cut off the whole upper part of the document, and then he'll write whatever he wants to, and then he'll have the witnesses already signed. So in that one line gap, he'll write a whole text of a document, and the next line has witnesses already signed over there. Why is it kosher when you have one line gap by the shtar and the edim, when we say that one line is a problem by the asharta? And that explains the Gemara in the Kesaver. Rabbi Yochanan holds, shtar haba hu b'shita achas b'edim b'shita acheres. If the document, the text, is on one line and the witnesses are on the other line, the line right after that, then it's going to be possible. As we explained, the reason is because, as we said previous daf, we can't learn out anything from the last line. So that is the last line, which is right before the witness's signature. And therefore, by that sharta, you're going to have it on that one line. You could write a whole new text and witnesses on the one line, and then you have the sharta right after it. That's going to be kosher. Therefore, it's going to be a problem if you have a gap of one line, because you could forge that. That's why it's possible, even one line by a sharta. But by a shtar, the gap between the shtar and the edim, there, if you're going to have that one line, the text, and then you're going to have the witnesses right under it, that's actually pasul. It's only kosher if they're on the same line. So therefore, that's why it's actually not a concern by one line, it's only a concern by two lines, where then you could write something in the first line, and then the second line, we're not going to learn anything out of it, since then you'll be able to forge the first line. That's why it's going to be pasul only with two lines. But the Gemara continues asking, which essentially it's repeating the same question that we said before, that he's going to cut off the whole upper part and he's going to write whatever he wants to and he's going to have the witnesses signed. But what the Gemara adds on to this question is as follows. V'leichish, we should be concerned that Dilma, maybe, that this space that there is between the document and the witnesses, maybe he will forge that one line. And what he's going to do, he's going to cut off the whole upper part of the entire document. And maybe Kasav, he's going to write in that one empty line that this whole thing, that a regular document, which we said that one line is kosher if there's one line between the document and the witnesses. Maybe he's going to write who, meaning the text, meaning whatever he wants to write, which is a forgery or one big lie, the Adav. And he's also going to sign forged witnesses over there, Bishita Achas, in that one line. I mean, originally we had answered, no, you have witnesses under it and you have the text, you can't have text and witnesses underneath. That's going to be possible. So Anatik Mora amends that question and says, no. He's going to write shtar and witnesses that are both forged on that one line. So it's going to come out that you have a document where the text and the witnesses are on one line, which we said is kosher. Now, but what's with the witnesses that's on the line beneath that? On that, V'omar, he's going to say, Ano, and Ve'ed B'shita Achas, we said he's going to do this on one line. But then regarding the second line, V'omar, he's going to say, Oh, Ano, L'Rabbis, Be'edim Hoda'avdi, Oh, regarding the witnesses on the line beneath that, that I just did to have more witnesses because I wanted to really publicize this. I wanted to have a lot of witnesses. The more people that witnessed it, they'll be able to get the word out. But really, it's a shtar and the edim on one line, which Rabbi Yochanan says is kosher. And therefore, we will validate it. And therefore, why is it kosher when there's a gap of one line, when in that case, we should be concerned for a forgery, even with one line, even by a gap between the shtar and the edim? Why did we say over there it's kosher and it's only possible with two lines? And that answers the Gemara. Ksav Rabbi Yochanan holds, similar like we answered for Rav previously, that no, kol ki hai gavna, such a situation, in other words, when we have such a document, which you have the text and the witnesses on one line, but there is also an additional line beneath that with other witnesses, oh, that already looks troubling, as we said, because then that could be a concern that maybe there was a one line, which then he cut off the whole thing and wrote a whole text on that and had the previous witnesses underneath that, then Ein Mekayman Oisim and Eid Mishlamat, then Rabbi Yochanan agrees over there that then you cannot verify it from the bottom witnesses, Elam and Eid Mishlamat, only with the witnesses on the top, meaning those who are signed on the same line as the text, and that's not going to be a problem because he forged it and he's not going to be able to get it through the courts and have it verified because everyone's going to realize that it's a forgery. The whole concern would only be if he would end up getting it verified from the bottom witnesses who are kosher witnesses, who had originally written on a whole different document, but there was a gap of one line which he cut off and he wrote everything on the one line with other fake witnesses, which he wanted to make it kosher because of that, because who ve'edav b'shura achas on one line, and that we say, okay, even if we'll say it's kosher, but you could only verify it through the upper witnesses, not with the bottom witnesses, and therefore, even according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's not going to be a problem if you left one line, because even if he could get in who ve'edav b'shita achas, he'll have to verify with that, and since the forgery, he's going to get stuck anyway. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is also not difficult, where he says that although one line is a problem between the Edom and the Asharta, that's because Asharta is automatically verifying, and then he could go ahead and write Hu ve'edav b'shita achas. That's not a concern with the gap between the text and the witnesses, because then you already have the witnesses, and you can't write a text in that one line, because then you have text and edim on the bottom, which is possible, because you can't learn off from shita achreina. And if you write Hu ve'edav b'shita achas and have the witness beneath that, we said, okay, fine, but then you're not going to be able to verify it from the bottom, from the kosher witnesses, only from the top ones, which is going to ultimately be realized that they're forged witnesses.